Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, your source for all things tournament play when it comes to Warhammer 40,000. I am your host, Eric. With me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello, everyone.
Yep, it's just the two of us this week, but we got a ton to go over. There are four GT level events. Well, one wasn't quite GT level, but we like them anyway, so we're going to talk about them. We've got quite a bit of shakeup in the ITC top 10 and several events next weekend. So wall-to-wall tournament coverage. But before we get into that, Games Workshop has dropped a little bit of news for us. And Ray, you've got a chance to look at the two of the new Knight households and their rules.
Yeah. So the first one is Terran. I'm assuming that's how you pronounce it. They're called Household Traditions. When determining the distance that a unit with this Household Tradition advances or charges, roll an additional d6 and discard the lowest result. That's pretty self-explanatory.
Pretty nifty.
Yeah, it also it points out that this is a Questor Imperialis, which means it's an Imperial Knight as opposed to a Mechanicum Knight. The second one...
Yeah, you pointed it out to me. I didn't realize that. So we're starting to see some pretty wide variation between... It seems like there's many Mechanicum Knights and Household Knights, and then there's Free Blades as well on top of that.
Yeah. The second one that they pulled up was the Household Raven. This one is a Questor Mechanicus. Models of this Household Tradition do not suffer the penalties for their hit rolls for advancing and firing assault weapons. Furthermore, during a turn in which a unit with this Household Tradition advances, all of its heavy weapons are treated as assault weapons.
That's kind of handy. It's, you know, especially when you look at an army like this with very few models on the table, moving in to hold objectives, especially in the ITC format, and suffering no penalties for that. I'll take it.
Yeah. It's pretty nice. And these are just the first two. Nothing as far as any kind of free blades go at this point. And as far as I'm aware, they haven't even announced how many households they're even going to have in the new codex.
Yeah, I've seen a few rumors bouncing back and forth between what they will be. Not sure if it's legit or not. It was a pretty salty source, but it should be quite lengthy to make up for the lack of new models. But we got to see some of the new models, including the new Big Knight and a new smaller Knight.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's seen the pictures of everybody remembers the blue one. But they also showed a picture of a red one, which looked, I don't know, the weapon on its right arm kind of looks like a close combat weapon, but I can't tell for sure. It looks very much like a spear.
And I heard it's a spear, and the other side I've heard it's a harpoon gun of some kind.
Okay. And then its left arm weapon almost looks like three Meltas strapped together.
Yeah. It's actually a triple flamethrower. I guess it does 3d3 shots or something like that. It's incredibly destructive, apparently.
Okay. It looks to have four missiles up there, which I've been hearing they're going to have some one-use-only weapons. So that's my first guess. The missile scene might be what they're talking about.
Yeah, what if they are one-shot missiles, and then similar to how Eldari got the warp gate and Nurgle got the fungus tree there, Knights are going to be getting some sort of mid-table refueling station. And one of the features you can do is if you dock your Knight up there for a turn, you get those one-shot missiles back. You get the reload.
I'd hate to think of how expensive that piece of terrain could be for your army list.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, at 120 points for the warp gate, anything goes at this point.
Mm-hmm. Another thing they announced is it looks like the Imperial Knights Renegade box set is coming back.
Woohoo!
It's mostly the same as before. You have one of the newer knight boxes, and then one of the older knights that could only make the paladin and the errant. But they did switch out the terrain piece that's in the box. They took out the old building and put in the, I believe they call it the galvanic magnivent. It's one of the ones from the that Armageddon box that they came out a while back.
Yeah, it's the big furnace looking thing. It's a cool piece. I mean, it's a little problematic. I think it wouldn't be a big deal if you're playing knight on knight, but getting line of sight blockage is a little tricky with that piece, but it's a really nice piece. So I'm excited to see it. And that Renegade box was a heck of a steal. So in terms of buying models on the cheap, so run with it. Go to your local game store and buy that.
And then another thing that popped up is an image of the new Armiger Helverins. These are another version of the Armigers. These ones have, instead of a close combat weapon and the Melta gun, they have two battle cannon-looking weapons. And it looks like these are going to be coming in a set of two in the box. So that's a few more options for you. Instead of always going, there are plenty of people who bought multiple boxes of Forgebane just so they could get a bunch of the Armigers.
Absolutely. I've been hearing that, and also been hearing, point drops across the board for all these models.
I've been hearing that too. Talk about the Armiger Knights going down into the 100 point range.
I hadn't heard any specifics. I mean, I just heard that they're severe reductions. And that the end of it is that you can field almost three or four knights, basically a full detachment under 1750, which we'll come to that number a little bit later.
Well, it's definitely something worth keeping an eye out for if you're a knight player. I believe they go on pre-order this weekend.
That is what I understood. I've been wrong before, but that was my understanding. So I look forward to seeing that. And a lot of neat new stuff coming out for the knights, and really fleshing out kind of a lot of stuff in the lore, but not a lot on the table when it came to customization. So one person's knight army pretty much looked like another person's knight army. Going back to those smaller knights, interesting. They're packaged in boxes of two, because I believe they're three knights per heavy, super heavy detachment or heavy support. I can't talk. Super heavy slot.
Yeah, it's minimum three, maximum five in that formation.
Wow.
And the armor can actually go into units of up to three.
Wow. So you could have 15 of them on the board, assuming they fit points-wise. Wow, that would be a lot. Well, we'll have to take a look and see how this all pans out, because definitely one thing about knights is they've always been a very polarized sort of on their own in the meta, because being not only the vehicles, but they're three, four models, you're not really going to get kill points off of them really at the big game hunter and tight in all these other key areas, and just ton of shooting along with it's hard to kill because it's just so many wounds. We'll see what happens. Definitely a lot to look at when this really comes out. So, and as always, Exterminatus will always have all your updates as they come out. So stay posted here on the website, as on our Facebook page, as well as here on the podcast. One other item that kind of slipped under the radar there, and I didn't talk about it last week, we probably should have, is good old Nottingham and their Throne of Skulls tournaments introduced their rules packet, or mission packet for lack of a better term, for the next season, so 2018-2019. And what's got a lot of people kind of scratching their heads is they dropped the points from a 2,000-point army to a 1,750 army. So all kinds of speculation. What does that mean? And is that something that will catch on in other tournament formats.
I could see it going either way for the points. Some people have argued that 2,000 points is too much to get done in 2.5 hours. I would have to disagree. People who are having issues with cell play, they're either doing it on purpose, of course, or they're going to do it regardless of whether they have to drop 250 points, which in many cases is maybe a couple of models. I mean, the only armies that aren't going to be dropping a very few amount of are the hordes. And they're already going to have too many for it to really matter.
I'm not sure what they make of it. There's a lot of speculations. People are jumping on, like you said, it had to do with slow play or finishing games. There supposedly was an issue at the finals where a player never got past round 3 and ended up going undefeated. Part of me kind of goes, I don't care how many points you have, still find a way, you know, to if there's no motivation to play faster, they're going to use up all the time as needed.
Yeah.
And so that part, I'm like, okay, slow play. I'm not a big fan of lowering the points for that. I will say, though, lowering the points, and this makes a lot more sense being this is being held at Warhammer World, means you have a lower point entry. And, you know, players can feel like I don't need as many models to get myself on the table. And especially in those tournaments where painting is required before you even step foot in the door. Like you said, it's probably one extra unit that you're losing, but that's, you know, one that's a lot less hobby you have to deal with.
Yeah.
I know.
It's just going to impact different armies in different ways.
Yeah. I do remember we ran a tournament right after 8th edition dropped, and it was a 1,000-point tournament just to get new players in the door. And the thing is, it worked. We had, I want to say, 30, 31 players or something like that. And what isn't that significant to most players, but what made it significant to us is it was 31 players that we had never met before. And it was very interesting because they were not our tournament regulars. So I was like, wow, what's going on here? Now, the sad news is I think only 2 of them transitioned into regular tournament players. But the long and short of it is I think there is a market out there for smaller games for people to get their feet wet. Do I think that's what all tournaments should be? No. But it's just interesting where that direction is going.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that some people just don't like the idea of walking around with 100-plus models. Some people prefer the smaller games.
Yeah, so we'll see how that develops, but if there's any additional trends. But as far as, it looked like it might be an isolated incident, but it was definitely worth bringing up. If you guys have any thoughts about the subject, again, hit us up on Facebook at Exterminatus Facebook page there. And what your thoughts are and what your preferences on point levels. All right. After the break, we dive into the tournament coverage.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
All right, welcome back. We had a busy tournament weekend. For those who don't know, here in the States, we are actually recording on Memorial Day, and Ray and I just want to extend a heartfelt thank you to all of the servicemen who are currently involved in the service, those who have served in the past, and those who gave the ultimate sacrifice as we honor them today on Memorial Day. So looking over the tournament action, we've got 4 tournaments of GT status or higher to talk about. First one, by far the coolest name of the bunch, is the Burning Couch. I know there's a story. We still don't know what it is. I just think they're big fans of Jane's Addiction. So check out the Nothing Shocking album cover. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Nonetheless, let's review the top eight from the Burning Couch GT. So coming in eighth place was William Pagonis with Death Watch. Yes, Death Watch cracked the top eight already. Didn't take long. In seventh place, Ivan Cho with Inari. Sixth place, Anthony Fitzgerald with Death Guard. Interesting enough, he's with Beast Coast. Must have made a long trip. Awesome. Fifth place, Mike Solito with High Fleet Kraken. Fourth place was Brandon Valley with Dark Angels from Codex Toledo. In third place, Alexander Bugansky with Drukhari. In second place, TJ Lanigan with a Chaos Army. And your 2018 Burning Couch champion is Louis Stolberg, also with Drukhari from the Steel Legion, Steel City Legion. So interesting. Two Drukharis in the top to eight, a Dark Angels, a Death Guard, Death Watch making a first appearance, another Chaos Army. But again, we're seeing that wide range of armies and factions in the top eight. So let's go over what does a number one list look like. Well, one, it gets cut off on the side edge. So sorry, Lewis, we'll do the best we can try to interpret, but the like left hand probably 2 inches got chopped off in the picture. Looks like he's got a Archon with a blaster and a Phantasm grenade launcher. He's got 3 units of 5 warriors with 1 blaster each, 3 Ravagers with disintegrator cannons, 2 Razorwing jet fighters with disintegrator cannons and splinter cannons. And then it gets a little chopped off. I'm not sure what this is, but something that has 2 disintegrator cannons. I bet you it's 2 Raiders with disintegrator cannons and 3 Venoms with splinter cannons. Really hard to read at this point because that part got chopped off. And then follow that, he's got a second attachment, the Prophets of the Flesh. He's got 2 Hemoculi with electrocorrosive whips. And then he's got 3 other units also with electrocorrosive whips, but they're only 51 points. Fortunately, they got cut off, so I have no idea what they are. So I have to kind of do a little research and reverse engineering. So that was your number one list going undefeated. He was averaging about 34 points a game in ITC format, so pretty strong and a huge lead over TJ Lanigan. He had 170 points to 137. On the flip side, TJ Lanigan coming in second place. He's got kind of a wide variety here in this Chaos list. Starts off with a Nurgle battalion. He's got Epidenus, Sloppity Bile Piper, and Spoilbox. I can never pronounce Souvenir. I can never pronounce him. He's then got 1 unit of 20 Plague Bearers and then 2 units of 30 Plague Bearers, followed by 3 Plague Burst Crawlers, of course, the Funky Tree, and then a Supreme Command attachment of not one, not two, 3 Demon Princes of Zeech, of all things, with Malefic Talons, Warp Bolters, and Wings. Not surprised he did well as what he did. He also scored a fair amount of points, 32, 31, 37 in his wins, and his 2 ties, 13 and 24. At 13-point ties, interesting. That's one game I'd love to know. He did that against Alexander Bogansky's Dark Eldar, or Drukhari. Curious to see how that game actually went. But, Ray, we're seeing a lot more of these Death Guard armies where they're just used to be they had 1 blob unit of 30. Now we're seeing the multiple units with easily 60 to 80 Plague Bearers on the table with like 1 punch unit, whether it be this case, it's the Demon Princes, other lists we've seen the Plague Drones. Is this something as Knights come along, will they continue to see that? Or is it just so they're just too tough and too many bodies?
Yeah, I think it's something we'll continue to see. More bodies with Knights, especially with Knights coming. We're going to probably see larger groups just to kind of help counter the high strength and moderate level of firepower of the Knights. So you're gonna see people probably running, especially something like Nurgle with how durable they can be. I'm gonna see more spam, for lack of a better term, squads.
Yeah, it's more than just, I mean, I wouldn't call it just spam. By the way, be careful with spam. They had a recall. Something wrong with their packaging, metal shards in the meat. So another reason to stay away from spam. But other than other safety notices to be aware of. Yeah, it seems like there's certainly something to be said with the five up. You know, you got the five up invul. So I really don't care what AP weapons you're shooting at me, whether it's a bolter or a las gun or a las cannon. I'm equally have a good chance of sloughing it off. And then once it gets through, I have that disgusting resilience of an additional five up. They're incredibly durable, and you have to do that umpteen number of times as I have more and more bodies on the table. So, yeah, I'd be curious to see as this works its way through what counters that, but it seems to be growing in popularity. William Pagonis made the top eight with Death Watch. Let's take a look at our first Death Watch tournament army here. And it's actually exactly what everyone's been talking about on the internet. So it starts off with a battalion with three HQs. It's got a Primaris Watch Captain, a regular Watch Captain, and a Watch Master. And he gave the Primaris Watch Captain the Bane Bolts of Eryxia. I have to look that one up. I forgot what that does. And a Mastercrafted Stalker Bolt Rifle. Everyone else, the regular Watch Captain has Jump Pack and a Mastercrafted Bolt Gun, as well as the Beacon Angelus. And then the Watchmaster has the Lore of Hidden Knowledge. And then he's got, I love, he even says on this, three identical units of the following. So his troop choices are a unit of five intercessors supported with two interceptors with plasma exterminators and an aggressor with an auto bolt storm gauntlets and frags grenade storm launchers. So if I remember this correctly, the aggressor allows him to move and shoot without penalty, and the intercessors give him the ability to fall back and still shoot as if they had the fly keyword. So he's got three units of those. And then he's got an additional unit of, same unit as above, five intercessors, aggressor. Instead of having two, he has four interceptors. And then last but not least, he's got a squad of veterans, two of them with bolt guns and three of them with heavy weapons, with missile launchers, though. Surprised to see them with missile launchers. And then last but not least, he's got two units of bikers, five bikers, I should say, twin bolt gun, and the sergeant has the storm bolter along with a twin bolt gun. And for extra fun, he added a patrol detachment of ultramarines, including Sergeant Teleon and a squad of 10 scouts, all with bolt guns.
What did you say the relic was?
He had a couple relics, actually. So the Bane Bolts of Eryxia, Eryxia.
Okay. Models with the special issue ammunition ability only add one to the damage of any special issue ammunition fired by the bearer. In addition, for each wound roll of a six made for any special issue ammunition fired by the bearer, the target suffers a mortal wound in addition to the normal damage.
Ouch. Okay, that's not nice. And the other one was Lore of Hidden Knowledge.
That's not listed in the relics.
I wonder what that is.
Give me one second.
No problem.
That's a warlord trait.
So that's his warlord.
Once per battle, if your warlord is on the battlefield, you can reroll a hit roll, wound roll, damage roll, or saving throw. In addition, if your army is battleforged and your warlord is on the battlefield, roll a d6 each time you use a stratagem. On a 5+, you gain a command point.
Very nice. And Beacon Angelus, I believe, is a way to basically like a teleporting beacon type thing, if I remember it right.
That is another relic. Once per battle at the end of your movement phase, the bearer can use the Beacon Angelus to teleport a friendly unit to his position. When he does so, select a Death Watch, infantry, or biker unit that is either on the battlefield or that is in a teleportarium. In either case, remove this unit and then set it up wholly within 6 inches of the bearer and more than 9 inches from any enemy model.
That's kind of handy.
Any model that cannot be set up is slain.
Still handy. I mean, that's, you're moving models around. You're basically teleporting across the table, a unit of choice. And being he's got a lot of redundancy in those units that he has, that's pretty powerful.
That it is.
All right. So that's what competitive Death Watch looks like these days. Interesting to see if that catches on. But I know a lot of the armchair quarterbacks who post on the internet kind of posted something similar. So nice to see it actually on the table. In case you guys are wondering, he lost his first game. Only got 7 points in that first game. And then he just went on fire. 32 points in a win, 26 points in a win, 28 points in a win, and then 28 points in a tie. So my guess is he had to figure out how to use his RMB and learned pretty quickly after that.
Looks like he went up. He might have gone up against Jeffrey Beeman.
Oh, let's check the pairings here.
Yeah, last round they played against each other. And it looks like that person who's in ninth was playing Death Skulls, which sounds very orky.
Actually, William lost his first round game to Lewis Stolberg, who went on to win the whole thing. So, no big deal there.
I was kind of talking about the tie at the very end.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's funny because they could see the other guy like, all I have to do is beat this guy and I get into the top 8. No, I tied him. Let's see here. Yeah, 528. Yep. All right, well, let's see what Death Skulls look like. Huh? Back to them. So Jeffrey Beeman brought us orcs. A battalion consisting of 3 weird boys and, oh my god, 1, 2, 3 units of 30 slugga... two units of 30 slugga boys. I got it backwards again. 2 units of shooto boys, 1 unit of 30 slugga boys, and then a unit of 28 Gretchen. Followed by an outrider detachment of a biker war boss with a head wapa kill chapa. It's a cool weapon. I like that already. 2 units of 25 storm boys and 2 war buggies with twin big shootas. Followed by a spearhead detachment with a big mech with a chapa and custom force field. 2 big tracks with a super scorcher and 5 custom mega cannons plus crot crew.
You ever see those videos of tsunamis?
Yeah.
It's kind of how I'm imagining this army playing.
It just comes at you. Ah! Yeah, it's pretty pretty intense. I just keep looking at that thing going like, oh my god, how do I... You do the math in your head, you're like, how do I even have enough bullets to kill all those orcs? So...
It's interesting to look at this. And Jeffrey Beeman... He won one game, lost the next 3, and then tied the last round. But he still accumulated enough points to end up in 9th.
Yep. If I remember right, this was a battle points tournament. Because if you go just a smidge lower to 11th, you got Josh Medlock with Sawtalk. He was playing Necrons. He went 4-1. But... being 4-1 wasn't enough because he was accumulating low point totals. So yeah, it was a battle point tournament.
Okay.
So now we're going to go to probably the most dangerous tournament ever, because it's being held currently this past weekend in Honolulu, Hawaii, near an active volcano.
That is nowhere near as dangerous as people like to think it is.
I think the footage is pretty impressive with blue flames coming out of the ground. I think that's pretty cool. Glad it's not in my backyard. I just have weeds. And all right, so your top eight for the Throne of War GT were as follows. In eighth place was Michael Mint with Inari. In seventh place, Michael Iwaoka with Adeptus Sororitas, or Sisters of Battle. Sixth place brought Dalton Schnell with Chaos Demons. Reed Oshiro came in fifth place with Inari. Damian Fransky came in fourth with Ultramarines. Sean Bocop, third place with Tau Empire. In second place with Cult Mechanicus. I haven't seen them up there that in a long time. Was Tuao Tran. And your top player for the Throne of War GT 2018 is Dwayne Uchida with Drukhari. He going a perfect.
You know how crazy it is seeing all these Drukhari doing first place?
It's bizarre. I mean, it.
You have no more excuses, sir.
No, there isn't. There really isn't. I remember someone literally getting to like a kind of a. It was definitely a backhanded compliment. And I just kind of. They looked like, well, you're. How competitive could you be if you're playing Dark Eldar? And I just looked at him like, I don't know. I could just sock you in the mouth and to show you. But it was just little like, if you're competitive, you wouldn't bother with that codex. And now it's, you know, they've won four GTs in the last 3 weeks. I mean, this is nuts. And they've not been this good since forever. I mean, it was like, oh my gosh. So what does this Drukhari list look like? And here's the other thing that's weird, is it used to be back when Drukhari was good, it was the same thing. Maximize as many disintegrators on the table as you could. And if you could afford that many raiders and ravagers, you won. And now they're completely different. This army is completely different from what we saw at the Alamo GT. So we start with a battalion of Prophets of the Flesh. You have Urin Raketh with a Homunculus with Electrocorrosive Whip. Three units of racks, one with a hex rifle, all five-man units. And then he's got three solo units of Talos, all with chain flails, macro scalpels, and haywire blasters. He then jumps over to spearhead attachment, Cabal of the Black Art. He's got an Archon with the Labyrinth Cunning and the Writ of the Living Muse. And, of course, surprise, surprise, three Ravagers. Interesting, though, he's got one with Disintegrators and two with a mishmash of one Dark Lance and two Disintegrators, I suppose the typical triple Disintegrators. And then he also added in two squads of Scourges. One of them is all blasters, so four blasters, one shard carbine. The other one's a mishmash of two blasters and two shredders. And then to round the whole thing out, he's also added a Razorwing Jet Fighter and a Void Raven Bomber to that detachment. And last but not least, he had some Craft World fun. They are Alatok, and he added a Farseer on Skyrunner. A unit of five Rangers. This looks like a patrol. Yes, this is a patrol. And a Hemlock Rife Fighter. So, trying to picture all these pieces coming together. It's a little. I mean, the key thing which you probably will see is, well, we've seen the Ravager thing happen in the past where they hang around the Archon and take advantage of the rerolling ones onto hits and to wounds. The fighters are, you know, the aircraft are going up forward much as they can. Skyrunner, the key thing that I'm learning there, and sure enough, he's printed his psychic powers on here. Doom is essential for Dark Eldar, for Drukhari, simply because they're able to reroll wounds is something they do not get often. So to be able to doom a vehicle, especially when it comes to, normally you would say with poison weapons, but he really doesn't have that many poison weapons in this list. If anything, the heavy lifting from shooting, if it's not coming from the Ravagers, it's coming from the Scourges. But that's a heck of a lot of blaster fire. He's got six models firing strength 8 weapons, and then It's got two additional dark lances on there, plus the all the missiles from the planes. It's pretty cool. And last but not least, you're in Rakith with surrounded by Talos. It's slowly becoming the new trend. I'm seeing a couple other people mention it online. It's kind of a neo version of the Corpse Thief Claw. So what do you need to be aware of with that is that all homunculi give plus one toughness, but Urin also gives you plus one toughness, plus one strength, and plus one leadership. So what I thought was interesting with the macro scalpel is already plus one. So suddenly the Talos are hitting our strength 8 with 5 attacks. And the chain flails, I believe, give you a reroll of rerolling ones to wound with the Talos. So you've got 15 attacks on 3 large, very large models, which recently got FAQ'd to having fly, which was the other thing. So they can hunker down like infantry in ruins and then go through the walls to assault people on the other side. And do a nice job of protecting Urien. And by the way, Urien gives you D3 command points at the start of your turn if he's your warlord. So Corpse Thief Claw might be making a comeback. The only thing I've been talking to our team about is how fast it is. And that's the problem. The Talos move 8. Their shooting is pretty puss poor to begin with. They're only ballistic skill 4. The old method was they used to get, being twin linked, they were fairly accurate. So you get the splinter cannons on there because they had a ton of shots. But now it only gets, you're hitting on 4s, and if you advance, you're hitting on 5s. So it's kind of minuscule.
How many shots do you have now compared to before?
Well, you would have, if you kept the splinter rifles, you would have, it's rapid fire 3. So you would have 6 at range and 12 at close range. And what he put on his list are haywire blasters. So he's got 2d3 shots. It's negligible. It's not, you know, he may puck a couple wounds here and there, being that it wounds vehicles on 4s. But there are other bigger, better platforms for haywire at this point. But it's what you're doing is if you put splinter cannons on your Talos down, you advance them, they don't shoot. Whereas the haywire blasters and the splinter pods are both assault weapons, so at least they get to shoot it. +605. That's the reason they do that.
Okay.
But you basically spend that first turn moving into position, and then turn 2, they do benefit from power from pain, so they can reroll their charge distances. So the question is 11 inches enough of a move on average to get in position for a turn 2 charge?
That depends on deployment.
Yep. And I've been believing it's ever since the Webway portal came out, I've been trying to find a way. How do I have my unit of 3 Talos pop out of the Webway portal to give myself a couple extra inches? And I haven't figured that out yet. So interesting question. How does a Cult Mechanicus list get to the top 2? Let's take a look at what that list looks like. And it comes with a lot of help from other Imperial friends. So right off the bat, we're going to start with the Supreme Command Attachment of not 1, not 2, but 3 Shield Captains on Dawn Eagle jet bikes. One is rocking a Hurricane Bolter. Actually, all 3 are rocking Hurricane Bolters. One's got an Eagle's Eye in the Misericordia, and the other one has got the Heroic Aquilius in the Misericordia. Second detachment is a battalion of Blood Angels. He's got 2 captains on jump pack and storm shields. One has a thunder hammer. The other one has the angel's wing and a thunder hammer as well, as well as a Mephiston. He's got 3 units of 5 scouts, and that rounds out your blood angel participation in the list. Now we actually get to the Mechanicus part. Another battalion, this Mars group. He's got Belisarius Call and a Tech Priest engineer. He's got three units of five Skitarii Rangers with the galvanic rifles. And then he's got a, let's see how many got here. One, two, three, four, five. Yep, five Castellan robots, each with heavy phosphor blasters. And yeah, that's all he's got on those. And that's how you get a pretty nasty Cult Mechanicus list. So he's probably deploying the scouts up forward to make sure that nothing can alpha strike his Castellan robots. He's got the shield cap, the shield on jet bike zooming forward along with the two jump pack and Mephiston to beat on people. You got the Rangers to hold down objectives, and you got the Stellan robots with that 36-inch range and canicles up the wazoo to blow away anything within range.
It's quite the list.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking at it like, okay, if I was going up against it, what secondaries would I take? You've got five captains in the first six lines of the list, so definitely going for Headhunter. I wouldn't go for Reaper because there's not a single unit with more than, there's only one unit with more than six models in it, so you're not looking at Reaper. Even it's a Gangbusters, is that the one where you get bonus points for multi-wound models? I think that's the one. You might take that. I have to read the exact wording. I don't know. I always have to double check it because you get bonus points depending on how many wounds are in the models.
Gangbusters. That's the one that has to do with multi-wound models.
Yeah. I'd probably do that and maybe Old School, but I'm focus on one of the scout squads or the ranger squads to get that first strike. And trying to see if he marked his warlord. I don't think he did, but that's okay. Oh, yes, he did. It's the Blood Angel with Angel's Wing and Thunder Hammer. So you know he's got to be coming towards you. So yeah, probably do Old School against it because he's going to give you warlord because he has to move forward with them. You got a good shot at first strike, and then it's just a matter of can you pull off line breaker or last strike. So that's an easy 3 points. Still a tough list though. Interesting. Alright, so two tournaments down, two more to go. We'll go over those after the break. All right, guys, and we're back, and we have two more GTs to go over. Next one is the Planes of War GT. This was an interesting event because you're only allowed to bring flyers. No, that's not true. It happens in the Great Plains of this fair country. And going over your top eight, we start with Ryan Mandrick with Alpha Legion. Seventh place, Mark LePage with Tau Empire. Colin F., he's that cool. He just puts a letter as his last name. Playing Death Guard, came in sixth place. Michael Knudsen with Chukari came in fifth place. In fourth place was William Shearer with Death Guard. And third place was El Schreiberg with Alpha Legion. In second place, Kyle Thompson with Astra Militarum. And your 2018 Planes of War champion is Brendan Krusty, also with Astra Militarum. So haven't heard from the Guard in a while. And here's GT where they come and take first and second, as long as also two Alpha Legion players making the top eight. So some old school finishes, but still some pretty solid armies. So let's take a look at our winning list here. So as mentioned, Astra Militarum, he starts off with Acadian Battalion, looks like. Yes, Battalion. Two company commanders, as well as a primary psyker. He's then got 1, 2, 3 infantry squads of eight, each of them armed with the heavy weapon. Interesting. Not your typical Warner. He actually took auto cannons. I'm impressed. In the elite slot, he's got two Astropaths. In the heavy weapon support, heavy weapon slot, he brought in not one, not two, but three units of three heavy mortars. So 9 heavy mortars, and a typical stock. He now brings in a second battalion, also Cadian. He brings in Knight Commander Pask, as well as a tank commander. He's got, once again, 3 units of 8 troops. All of them with their heavy weapon is an autocannon. He's got 2 Lehman Russ battle tanks in his heavy support slot. And then last but not least, he took an Outrider attachment. These guys are Catachan. HQ slot is a Primaris Psyker. And he's got in the hell, 3 Hellhounds with heavy flamers. Interesting. All of them with turret-mounted Inferno cannons in the fast attack slot. Quick list. Looking at this list real quick, I didn't realize it. If you're impressed by that list, it's a 1750 list. Didn't realize this tournament was playing. Yeah. Who knew? I like the versatility with the autocannons with the mortars. I've never been a big fan of the all mortars all the time. I always thought the autocannon was offered a little more punch for the points. So glad to see that. Interesting. This guy's fringing on Mitch Pelham's copyright by taking Hellhounds. But I am concerned there are 4 Lehman Russ battle tanks in this list, and I don't think the average list knows how to deal with that. That's 48 wounds at toughness 8 with a 3-up armor save, and if it doesn't move, it can shoot twice.
Hey, if you can play it, you can play it.
Again, something you don't see on an everyday, so curious to see how that all pans out. And it's also interesting because it's also very different from the second place player who also took an Astra Militarum. So really cool to see this. Part of his list did get cut off, but we'll do the best we can. Looks like it is also a battalion to start. It looks like a company commander and a Primaris Psyker in the HQ slot. 3 infantry squads with mortars in the fast attack slot. 2 more Hellhounds, as well as an Artabita pattern Hellhound squadron. There must be some Forge World variant. I'm not familiar with that particular Hellhound. I'll have to look that one up. Second battalion, he has Blood Angels. Everybody loves the Blood Angels. Mephiston, 2 jump pack commanders, or captains rather, with Thunderhammer and Storm Shield. 3 units of 5 scouts. And then he adds in a Supreme Command attachment of Custodes captains on Dawn Eagle jet bikes.
That formation with those models is really becoming popular.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's just kind of splashed in there. So, and it was interesting. I heard on another podcast, I wish I could credit who it was because it was a really good statement. Part of it also maybe is that you buy the box and you have everything you need.
I've looked at the guide on how to build it. The only difference in the models is technically the head, because they want you to put the non-helmeted head on for the shield captain, but at the same time you can just say that that's a shield captain. So yeah, buy a box, you have what you need.
Literally an attachment in a box, so it's pretty neat to see that. All right, so that leaves us with one final tournament. And of course, we knew about it because we talked to one of the tournament organizers last week. So once again, we want to thank Kevin Shook for being on last week. And this, of course, is the Midwest Conquest. Quite a large turnout. Looks like about 78 players came out for it. If I did my math right there.
Yep.
And as he had promised, interestingly hear him say how that people will drive those distances to get to these tournaments, and they showed up for this event. So glad to see it was a successful event, and we'll be reaching out to Kevin again in the future to find out any other details of that event and any future events his group will be running. So let's take a look at their top 8 of the Midwest Conquest. Coming at number 8 was Jim Orr with Blood Angels from Forge World Columbia. 7th place, Mike Smith with Chaos Demons. 6th place, Scott Blelgan with Tyranids. In 5th place, playing Drukhari, Ben Chirwin. 4th place, playing Tyranids as well, Ryan Verbeek. Sam Henley, we've talked about him numerous times, playing Necrons, came in 3rd. Coming in 2nd place, and I called it, Trent Northington, playing Thousand Suns. I told you he'd do well. And your 2018 Midwest Conquest GT champion is Richard Wendow with Tau Empire. So look out. Internet's going to explode. The Tau Empire have won a major tournament. Ah! The codex is broken. So what is in a winning list for Tau? Well, kind of everything we've been talking about all the previous weeks. So he starts off with a battalion. Trying to see which sept he even took. It's not on his list. Oh, well. Started with a Cadre Fireblade, a Cold Star suit. Interesting enough, he's got a high output burst cannon missile pod. He didn't retrofit it with the 3 Melta guns that everybody else does. Or fusion gun, excuse me. He also added Darkstrider. Haven't seen him in a while. He has 3 units of 10 Fire Warriors and Strike Teams. And then he has 3 individual units of Riptides. All kitted exactly the same with smart missile systems and heavy burst cannons. Target lock and velocity trackers. Fast attack slot, he's got 3 units of 8 shield drones. And that rounds out the detachment. Second battalion is rinse, lather, repeat. Cadre Fireblade, Cold Star battle suit. This one, though, he's got the 4 fusion blasters, the one we talked about in the past. And also adds an ethereal this time around. It's the 3rd HQ slot. He's got 3 5-man Fire Warrior squads and strike teams. And then in the elite slot, he's got 2 units of 3 battle suits, all with burst cannons.
Seems like a...
Yeah. Because I want to think, all right, Cadre Fireblade, you usually take those as a very... he's a great character, so he's easy to protect, but he's also a reliable marker light because of his good ballistic skill. The Cold Star suits are great for forward harassment. Darkstrider has a nifty ability where he can... I can't remember if he reduces the toughness now or if he increases plus 1 the wound, 1 of the 2. But it makes it easier to wound a target. The Riptides is something new. I'm not sure what to make of that. And then he throws in 8 shield, 3 units of 8 shield drones. So,
No, the shield drones are there for a very specific reason. To take shots.
Yeah, I understand that. I just kind of question, do the Riptides provide that much fire output to warrant that? And stealth suits are usually there to support other crisis suits, and not really doing that. I don't know. I have to look at that.
He managed to get in first place with it, so he did something
right.
He
definitely did something right. So he's got 6 characters, so I definitely would pick Headhunter against him. He's got 3 units of 10 Fire Warrior, so I definitely do Reaper on that one. I believe Riptides have 14 wounds, so he could do Big Game Hunter and collect 3 there, and then go after one of the Cold Star suits with that. And... your 3rd one is kind of whatever you want to do. Recon, old school, something like that. So, yeah, I definitely want to see this list in action, or anyone else who may have played this, definitely want to talk to Richard about this list. So, Richard, if you're listening, I'd like to know what's going on. Trent Northington has by far the shortest list I've ever seen in my life. It's conveniently fits in like a third of a page, but there are a ton of units in this particular thing. So he brings a opening battalion of 2 Zeech Demon Princes with wings and double talents, and 3 units of 11 cultists. The second attachment to Super Heavy Auxiliary with Magnus the Red. And then finally he has a Battalion of Thousand Suns, featuring Azeech Demon Priest with wings and double talents, Araman, 10 cultists, 2 units of 30 Zangors, and 3 shaman. So, Ray, you're the Thousand Suns expert. What do we got going on here?
Well, the way I've heard it put is you want Zangors in your list, and they're good. They're nearly as cheap as the cultists. They're tougher, they work better, and they've got an end one save. So you got those guys running in front. They're a little bit harder to kill. I'm always a little bit sad when I don't hear about any actual Thousand Suns list, but I guess I can't complain. Certainly plenty of the Demon Princes running around just taking things out as they can. But it's definitely a heavy field presence is what they're going for on this list. Did they have any... Did anybody have the Dark Matter Crystal?
And that's listed on this list. Okay. So he may be choosing his relics game by game.
Okay. That's definitely something that's he'd want to go for in this list. To either move one of the Zangor units or one of the cultist units. One thing that kind of surprised me is that there's no mention of any of the Zangor Enlightened. Which... I think they're a pretty good unit. You know, they're pretty quick.
Those the ones that are on the little flying disc things?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. So on those at our tournament last week, two large blobs of those. And I wish I could stay. I got pulled to other tables to make, you know, judgments and all that. But he was able to get across the table and pin the opponent in the deployment zone. But when I came back, it was a turn and a half later, and he had lost an entire squad and was no longer able to pin him. But to have that kind of movement, I was kind of like, ooh, what are those things again? I need to take note.
I don't know. I always think at least having some sort of unit of Thousand Suns can be useful. They're against your average unit, they're a 2+ save with the 5+ in Vuln. All right, yeah. And they've got a decent gun. But he did not go that route. I was a little surprised to see Magnus. I've heard a lot of people talk down and playing with Magnus right now.
Yeah, I've been hearing that, but I've also been hearing kind of a resurgence that some people are bringing back. Not only Magnus, but the whole Magnus and Morty show could be making a return.
The anti-fluff lower punch, as I like to call it.
Yeah. So that was Trent Northington. One other list I want to talk about real quick. Sam Henley came in third with Necrons. And this is a very interesting Necron list because it's not something we've seen regularly. It involves simply... starts out with a battalion.
Yep.
2 cryptics.
Mm-hmm.
One, and these are all Sawtak, by the way, is his dynasty.
Okay.
Staff of Light and a cloak, and the other one, Cryptek, which is not his warlord, has the Abyssal Staff.
Okay.
It's got 3 units of 5 Immortals armed with Teslas in his troop slot. And in his heavy support slot, he's got 3 Doomsday Arcs.
Okay. Interesting choice.
And then let that soak in for a second, because then he backs it up with not one, but 2 super heavy detachments.
Tesseract.
Yep, 2 Tesseract Vaults with Nicolak Dynasty.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot of talk on 2 or even 3 Tesseract Vault lists. Might explain why they're constantly out of stock on the GW webpage.
You know, we had that at our local game store. That Tesseract Vault must have been there a year and a half.
Yeah.
And then this comes out and yeah, they're out of stock.
Yeah. The which cloak did the Cryptex have? Was it the new one?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'd imagine that what they do, the way that they do this, is they would keep the three Doomsday Arcs fairly close to the back, and have the two Cryptex in between. Because with that cloak, with the new cloak, what they can do is they can repair the Doomsday Arcs better than normal. Now that you don't have to worry about facing, it doesn't matter which direction your stuff is. As long as you don't move the Doomsday Arc, you can fire it at its strongest profile. And if I remember right, it's D6 shots now.
I believe you do get upgraded to D6.
Yeah. Anything big that goes up against that, against this list, is probably not going to last long.
Yeah.
Because with three of them, that's minimum three, and as many as 18, strength 10, if I remember right. One thing I'm a little bit surprised about is a lot of people are talking up the Tesla. And yeah, Tesla's good. You can potentially get extra shots. I still have to admit I kind of like the gauze. I've looked at it recently, and at least for the Immortals, the gauze weapon being strength 5 and minus 2 AP makes it a little bit better in my eyes than I had originally considered it. And being the same points as a Tesla, I like that gun a little bit more personally.
I just think there's just too much minus 1 to hit in the game right now. So, in Tesla, still, like on the Tesseract vaults, you still got 20 Tesla shots. But getting those extra, you know, all those sixes become fives. So you're not going to get the bonus shots with those minus ones.
Right.
That being said, I believe the Tesseract vault is at least toughness 8, maybe toughness 9, and 28 wounds.
That it is.
So going back to your, you know, the idea that the Cryptex are repairing the Doomsday Arcs, maybe he's splitting them up and repairing one of the Doomsday Arcs, one of the Tesseract vaults as well.
It's possible. With that cloak, they do have fly, and they do gain movement. I think they go up to movement 10.
Well, he's surfing a crypt spider or whatever. So, but anyway, I just feel bad. Some guy's going to be here 2 weeks from now. He's got his brand new Knight Codex, and he's like, I can't wait to start this. He lines up against this army on the other side. Oh, no. Just bad news.
Yes.
So, I'd be curious to see as this booster. I mean, third place is probably the highest I've seen, but it's the first time I've seen only in the two tests. I've seen the triple Tesseract vault, but I think this list brings a nice direction of, you know, running a little more balance with two Tesseract vaults and all those Doomsday Arcs. I'm just impressed who built all those models. None of those models are particularly easy to build. So
the Doomsday Arcs are okay. They can be a little bit finicky when it comes to transport because, well, little sticks. So, the Tesseract Vault, yeah. I've seen those in pieces. That's a lot of work.
This is insane. So, my hat goes off to you there. So, that is your tournament talk for this particular week. After the break, Ray and I will go over the ITC Top 10, as well as upcoming events in the ITC for next week. All right, welcome back. It's time to go over your ITC Top 10. We've had a couple more updates since last week, so some minor shakeups, but definitely some interesting perspective now that all top 10 of the players in the ITC Top 10 have at least five events under their belts. So coming in 10th place is Anthony Bellum at 504. Jessica Bowman, the top Necron player currently in the ITC, comes in ninth place with a 3-point lead over Anthony. Just 7 points ahead of Jessica is Andrew Ford. Just above that is friend of the show. 6-point lead over Andrew Ford is Don Husen with Death Guard. And by the way, if you guys are worried about him losing his swagger because his Plague Burst Crawler list got nerfed by the FAQ, no sympathy required. His new list is brutal. Brought that to Scorched Earth, and he made further changes. It's just more of the same, just more pain. Sixth place, 9-point lead over Don is Ryan Olson. And then as we had last week, there's this major shift between the bottom five and the top five of the ITC. So with almost a 18-point lead over Ryan Olson is Bruce Merker in fifth place. Mitch Pelham with a 7-point lead in fourth place. TJ Lanigan with a 6-point lead in third place. And then a gargantuan 60-point lead over TJ Lanigan is Joshua Death, who had been in first place for the previous nine of the previous 10 weeks, which means your number one player with a 70-point lead over Josh Death is Matt Rutt with 691 points over five events. And by the way, does not include his performance at the Midwest contest. Conquest, which by the way, he came in ninth. He just missed the top eight by just a few scoshing points. So give you an idea where these guys kind of flesh out. We got some expanded statistics here. Best overall record is actually Josh Death. He's got 18 wins in GT and larger events, but he's also played the most grand tournaments and major events. Other key statistic, why is Matt in first place? Not only does he have the most points, but he has the best record in games played after round three. He is 7-0, the only player to be undefeated other than Anthony Bellum, who's 4-0. Interesting enough, some players that may need to look a little closely is both Ryan Olson and Jessica Bowman. They have the two players who have a losing record after turn four. The other one is, it's our good friend Don Husen. He's at 2-3. So clearly some room there, win a big tournament and move up their rankings quite a bit. And then interesting enough, Matt Rutt is a perfect 13-0, Josh Death 18-0, TJ Langham 8-2 in tournament play. And these are GT levels and higher events. Mitch Pelham is 14-3, Bruce Merker 9-1, Ryan Olson 7-1, Don Husen's 8-3. Andrew Ford, he's been getting around 15-4 in GT level events or higher. Jessica Bowman 5-4. Wow. Yeah. And Anthony Bellum 8-2. So 8 wins, 2 losses. That's not too shabby. But yeah, Andrew Ford's interesting. He's got 19 games in GT level or higher, 15 wins, 4 losses, but he's 6-1 after round three. So interesting how that those trends continue. Who can hang on to top 10 and who falls by the wayside? So Ray, what events do we have coming up next week?
All right. So I noticed 3 events. The first one is Nikon 2018 at the Napier Boys High School. That's in Napier Hawke's Bay in New Zealand. Got the 2018 Bug Eater GT. That's at Millard West High School in Omaha, Nebraska.
That's a great event to support because it's actually a fundraiser for the debate team there.
Cool. And then there's the Basement Collective ITC GT. That's in Sudbury, Ontario.
My favorite hockey player grew up in Sudbury, Ontario. So that's an awesome name, by the way, the Basement Collective. That's really cool. All right, then. So we'll look for those events as well as any other breaking news regarding the new Knights Codex we expect to come out in the next 2 weeks. If you need to get a hold of us, best place to get us is at our Facebook page. Until next week, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.